here of Wish That, but we will before the day's over. Beyonce is her birthday today, born on this day in 1981. Of course, that's her end of time. And we are going to jump into our conversation here. The Ukraine is a very confusing subject for many people in terms of what is going on there and why it's going on. NATO is meeting as we speak in Wales. The top of their agenda will be NATO. And some people say part of this is the regalvanizing of NATO is this crisis between Ukraine and Russia, between Russians and other Ukrainians in the Ukraine. We're going to talk about it from a number of different perspectives today with our guest and your help at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. You can log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet me at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. We're joined here by Dr. John Quigley, who is Professor Emeritus of International Law at Ohio State University, appointed as an expert by OSCE in 1994 to mediate between the Ukraine and Crimea on the status of Crimea. Dr. Taras Kuzio joins us, Research Associate at the Center for Political and Regional Studies at the Canadian Institute for Ukrainian Studies at the University of Alberta. And Robert Perry joins us, investigative journalist who broke many of the Iran-Contra stories from the 1980s for the Associated Press and Newsweek, author of three books, including most recently Neck Deep, The Disastrous Presidency of George W. Bush. And gentlemen, welcome. Good to have you all with us.
Good morning.
Good morning. And folks, please do join us at 410-319-8888. We would love to hear your thoughts on this. So this is, you know, a very confusing piece for many people. John, quickly, let me begin with you, because we hear... You follow Ukraine from the beginning when Ukraine separated from the Soviet Union, from then Russia, gave up its nuclear weapons in order to become an independent nation of Ukraine. Watch the demonstrations that most Americans and people supported years back, and seeing this democratic process happen in Ukraine, and then things exploded in the last year. And it's a very confusing footing for most people to understand. Talk a bit about that history from your perspective.
Yeah, I think you're right. It is a bit difficult to dope it all out. Of course, it started with the issue in Crimea and has kind of gone from there. And I think the Crimea issue was not well understood because Crimea had a particular history, a strong connection to Russia. It had been part of Russia historically. Going back to the end of the 18th century, and there was a very strong sentiment there to be part of Russia, and I think that whole episode, this is last spring, was misperceived in the West. It was perceived as an effort by the Russian government to reconstitute the Soviet system, which I think was a great exaggeration. And I think that's where things went downhill. I think the population in Crimea was strongly in support of an affiliation with Russia. And I think it would have been wise for Ukraine to accept that because of Crimea's particular history. I mean, it had only become part of Ukraine for reasons that were not particularly strong.
Only clear in Khrushchev's mind.
Yes. Yeah.
if it was clear even then.
but I think things went downhill from there, and we began the sanctions, and the relationship with Russia deteriorated rapidly.
So let me turn to Taras Kuzio. I'm glad you're joining us once again, Taras. So talk a bit about your perspective on Crimea.
I'm finding it difficult to hear your commentator. It's very, very faint, or he's speaking very quietly. So I only caught a bit of what he said. I find his comments actually are not very informative, because to say that Crimea was always part of Russia is simply historically not true. He doesn't know his history. The Crimea was part of Russia in the couple of centuries leading up to the Russian Revolution, but prior to that was part of the Ottoman Empire for six or seven centuries. And to say that sort of basically begins history in the late 18th century when this area was taken over. And secondly, if we use the argument that the Ukrainians should have basically acceded to this pro-Russian sentiment in the Crimea, then why do we just stop at the Crimea? Let's do referendums all over the place. Kaliningrad, let the Germans have it back. Kuril Islands, Japanese. And how about, for starters, Texas and California to the Mexicans? And maybe Florida, throw that one in. I mean, I think I find it incredible that somebody with academic and diplomatic background would hold such a revisionist viewpoint.
Robert Perry, let me bring you into the conversation now.
Okay. What's the question?
Well, the question is what you've just been listening to and what your response is.
Well, I think we obviously do have situations where countries, for different reasons, break apart, where populations that have been oppressed or feel alienated for whatever reasons vote for independence and separation. And the United States historically has respected that. It's been part of our concept going back to the Wilsonian period of self-determination for countries. And recently, you've had situations like South Sudan breaking away from Sudan based on the votes of the people of South Sudan. You had Kosovo breaking away from Yugoslavia or Serbia. So you've had examples of this. Czechoslovakia broke apart into the Czech Republic and to Slovakia. So the idea that conditions must be maintained at all costs, even if it's against the will of a population, is not part of what America has stood for over the years. Now, clearly, you don't, in a willy-nilly fashion, want to see countries be breaking apart. That's certainly true. But when there are extraordinary circumstances, and certainly the Ukraine situation, as it evolved in February of this year, became an extraordinary circumstance. You had an elected government under Viktor Yanukovych, which was facing a popular uprising to some degree in the Maidan. There was violence from both sides. There were these neo-Nazi militias that were being prepared in western Ukraine that were being sent into the Maidan, according to people who were part of this. There was violence. There were people being killed on both sides. That led to a February 21st agreement in which President Yanukovych agreed to essentially accept limited powers and up and moving up elections where he could be voted out of office. And the point would have been to maintain this constitutional structure, which people at the OSCE and others have praised in recent years. But then you had, on February 22nd, this uprising spearheaded by some of these extremist nationalist groups who seized presidential buildings and forced Yanukovych and his people to flee for their lives. So you had an extraordinary situation where some of the ethnic Russians, both in Crimea and in the eastern part of the country, felt they were being disenfranchised, in effect, since Yanukovych had been their guy. His base had been in the east of Ukraine. So you had these very slapdash referenda, and I think the OSCE is critical of that because of they were done rather hastily. But they in Crimea, it certainly reflected the will of the people there, that where there is a strong Russian element, and there is a strong Russian history there. I mean, whether it's only a few centuries or a couple of centuries old, it's still quite a ways. And you had this desire to break away from a failed state of Ukraine and join Russia, and that's what happened. And I think whether or not that should happen in other parts of Ukraine is a political issue. In most cases, I think people are looking for some kind of federalized system which would give the people of the different sections of Ukraine more autonomy. So, but that's been sort of the core issue that doesn't seem really all that debatable in many ways. In the United States, we have a federalized system. But it has become center of a major international confrontation.
Is there a possibility of somebody else speaking on this program?
I beg your pardon, Tyrus. What do you say? Yeah, you're going to...
Is there a chance of somebody else speaking on this program? Your commentators...
You are in a moment. We left one person finish at a time on this program. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tyrus.
Yeah, but he's been speaking for a very long time, and all four or five of his points are all completely wrong. And he's got this sort of very Russocentric viewpoint about fascists running the Euromaidan. Firstly, on the Crimea, this wasn't a case of, to compare it to Czechoslovakia, where you had a velvet divorce, is absolutely ludicrous. This is a case of a foreign power coming into the Crimea and instigating a separation of that country and then annexing the territory. How is this comparable to Czechoslovakia? Russian sources themselves, which were leaked from the presidential administration, gave actual support in that referendum at 15-20% of those who took part. So how you can say that referendum was a representative of public opinion is simply not true. Public opinion polls prior to the Russian annexation gave support for Crimea's union with Russia at 40% only. On the question of fascists and neo-fascists, this is Moscow's line, which is surprising to hear from an American. The actual academic studies of the Euromaidan give the typical, shall we say, participant as being somebody from the middle classes and students. Those are typical participants. And as for people being killed on both sides, maybe there's a question of mathematics here, but when you have 110 participants killed by unarmed participants killed by policemen and 15 policemen killed in unknown circumstances, that doesn't strike me as an equal balance somehow. So I think that what we have is the Crimea was seen as internationally as part of Ukraine. The U.S., United Kingdom, and Russia signed the Budapest Memorandum in 1994, recognizing Ukraine's territorial integrity, in return for which Ukraine gave up the world's third largest nuclear weapon arsenal. Russia reneged on that. It reneged on the 1997 Ukrainian-Russian treaty recognizing the border. And then, following the Crimea, launched, yes, there was anger and bitterness at the manner in which Yanukovych fled the country. But there wasn't likely to be this mass violence, which has led to horrendous atrocities. The atrocities committed by pro-Russian militants have been amply documented by Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, UN, OSCE, Council of Europe. There's simply no question that this is a terrible situation, and this has all been engineered by a foreign power. So we should bear that in mind, and then to compare it to other examples is simply wrong. This is quite a unique situation, and there wouldn't have been either a referendum on independence in the Crimea or this terrible level of violence and human rights atrocities without the intrusion of a foreign power.
Well, excuse me a second. I've been insulted here. I've been accused, I think, of presenting Russian propaganda, if I get this correctly. I'm an honest journalist, and I take offense at what your commentator said. We're dealing with facts here. If you want to talk about foreign powers intervening in Ukraine, you also have to include the fact that the United States has been very active in trying to create a political situation in Ukraine through the National Endowment for Democracy, which had scores of operations functioning in Ukraine to try to destabilize the situation. The president of NED last September wrote how he called Ukraine the biggest prize and made it a target for essentially regime change. You've had people like Victoria Nuland, the Assistant Secretary of State, talking publicly about how the U.S. has invested $5 billion, she said, in the European aspirations of Ukraine. So you've had a very consistent pattern of the U.S. also being involved in trying to alter the course of the political situation in Ukraine and helping to instigate some of the troubles. You've had also the European Union factoring in here. This is not a one-sided deal, as this commentator pretends. This is a much more complex matter, and frankly, the propaganda that he is spouting is what we've heard from the State Department and from some very self-interested parties relating to pushing this into an extreme crisis far beyond what's really called for when you consider the rather simple idea that people should have some self-determination over their own lives in different parts of Ukraine.
But, and John, quickly, let me bring you back in the conversation. I mean, it seems when you read, and I've read all the things that all three of you have been writing in the last several weeks on this crisis in Ukraine and with NATO meeting now. I mean, it seems to me that what we're looking at in many ways is this the loggerhead coming up that's both economic and political, as well as potentially militarily, between Russia and the United States and NATO over a number of issues. And Ukraine is the piece in the middle that's inflaming it all. I mean, people can argue on both sides about this, the duly elected government of Ukraine being thrown out with U.S. support, and about the Russians supporting Russian separatists inside of Ukraine. There have been atrocities on both sides that have been documented. There are internal refugees as well that are the victims of both sides. We've seen that happen. So that's what I'm trying to get to here in terms of what is underlying this. What are we really looking at here that is beyond Russia or the U.S.'s interests or NATO's interests?
Well, I think we should be looking towards some kind of solution to the whole matter. And I'm not sure that we're very close to it, but I think it is attainable. As Robert Perry was saying, the Eastern Ukrainian elements that are now engaged in military action against the central government are seeking some kind of autonomy from the central government. And given the history of Ukraine and the sentiment in the eastern part of the country, it seems to me that the central government should be able to find a way to accommodate that. It shouldn't be that difficult. I mean, certainly the people who were initiating the efforts in Donetsk and Lugansk were, I think, some of them at least hopeful of being able to separate entirely from Ukraine. But the Russian government has not shown an interest in that, so that's not really on the agenda. And there should be a way of figuring out some kind of situation that they wouldn't feel threatened. I mean, you did, you know, back a few months ago, have the Ukrainian parliament taking action that would be adverse to having Russian as an official language of the country. I mean, that was then reversed rather quickly, but that really did frighten people in that part of the country.
But I think, and before we go to break here in a couple of minutes, I mean, I think that the couple of the issues kind of to explore with this, I mean, is that what will NATO's response be to what's going on right now and what that could mean? Are we stumbling into an armed conflict that could be dangerous to the entire planet if it occurs? And this is not just Ukraine. If you look at the history of most of the provinces of the former Soviet Union to the west and of parts of Eastern Europe, like Moldavia, other places, there are large numbers of Russian-speaking people in all those countries now because of the last 70 years, last 150 years. And so, I want to explore that when we come back from break about what is the potential from those two scenarios. We're going to come right back with our guests to continue this conversation about Ukraine. 410-319-8888. We are taking a break with Midnight Train to Georgia. We're not talking about the former Soviet Union. We're talking about the Southern United States. Gladys Knight and the Pips. Bubba Knight of the Pips was born on this day in 1942. We'll be right back.
So he's leaving the life he's come to know. Ooh.
He said he's going.
He said he's going back to find.
Going back to find.
Ooh, 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 what's left of his world. The world he left behind. Not so long.
Our band could be your life. Real names be
That's History Lesson Part 2 by the Minutemen. On this day in 1958, George Hurley of the Minutemen was born on this day. As we celebrate the music of this day in history, we're here with Dr. Taras Kuzio, research and Robert Perry and Dr. John Quigley as we look into the Ukraine. And I want to come back to where I left off right away. And Taras, I'll begin with you and go right to Robert Perry and over to John Quigley. There is a significant Russian population in many countries. This is the beginning, could be the beginning of strife in many countries. Talking to folks the other day in Moldavia, they say they have a very different situation there because the country's always been close and together, but people said that about the Ukraine as well. And if this unfolds, are we unfolding into a very dangerous scenario between the West and Russia?
I think that if we accept as, I think there is an indication that both of your other commentators seem to be leaning towards that, that there is some kind of justification for what's been happening, then we have to recall that the last time we heard the right of a foreign leader to bring together into one state people who all spoke the same language was back in the 1930s, German speakers. Now we have a leader who is saying that he has a right to defend Russian speakers. There's very little difference in the rhetoric there. On the question of who's next and what kind of worms does this open up, well, of course, Latvia, NATO and EU member, would be the probably potential next scenario. Russian is far more widely spoken in Latvia, 50% of the population. You hear it more in Riga than in Kiev. That is a potential, and Putin would love to test out NATO's resolve there. There are pro-Russian countries, Belarus and Kazakhstan. Russian nationalists see northern Kazakhstan as southern Siberia. But going back to the point of, you know, why should we just stop at Ukraine, would your two commentators also agree that Russia is a country where, yes, Russia is proposing federalism for Ukraine at the same time as Putin has dismantled or is dismantling and tightening up centralization in Russia? Shall we have referendums inside Russia? I mean, what about Chechnya? Majority of the Chechens wanted independence. Why should we just stop at the Crimea? This potentially opens up a can of worms. This is what President Obama was talking about in Estonia yesterday, that, yes, there have been exceptional cases of parts of countries breaking away. Southern Sudan, Eritrea, Kosovo are the typical examples. But they are far more exceptions to the rule. The primary objective of the international community, United Nations, has been since World War II to support the territorial integrity of states. In that sense, Russia's a revisionist power. If you want to support that revisionist, starting with Ukraine, do not live under the fiction that Ukraine is the last country that Putin will go for.
So it was Bob, was that you, Bob Perry, I was hearing?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the biggest bunch of nonsense I've heard for quite a while. But frankly, the point is that this was not a crisis that Putin initiated. Putin did not want to have a crisis in Ukraine. The situation was created by the EU offering an association agreement to Ukraine. Essentially, the EU was interested in expanding its influence into Ukraine to pull Ukraine away from Russia. It wasn't a case of Russia trying to invade or cause trouble in Ukraine. The Russians were finding themselves sort of reacting to this move by the EU. And then, of course, you had President Yanukovych, who was democratically elected, entertaining the idea of joining this association agreement. But then when the International Monetary Fund also said there would be some very stern reforms that it wanted imposed first, Yanukovych pulled back, and Putin offered him a more generous deal for his economy, a $15 billion loan guarantee, which that Yanukovych then was willing to accept. That's when, with the instigation, or at least the encouragement, of key U.S. officials, including Victoria Nuland, the Assistant Secretary of State, Senator John McCain, NED President Carl Gershman and a number of others, the U.S. sought to join this effort to pull Ukraine away from Russia. And that led to the violent overthrow of the elected president of Ukraine. That's an extraordinary set of circumstances, not this sort of easy idea that this commentator makes that somehow compares this to an effort by Hitler to seize German territory before World War II. This wasn't an effort by Putin to seize Ukraine. It was an effort by the EU initially and then the United States to pull Ukraine away from Russia. So this idea that this is part of some grand scheme that somehow Putin concocted to then reclaim Estonia or something is absolutely nonsense. And there's not a single shred of U.S. intelligence, at least that I'm aware of from the people I talk to, that supports this. This is part of a propaganda effort to exaggerate a very localized, rather unique problem into some grand, you know, big reason we have to have NATO taking much more aggressive actions militarily. And it's a very dangerous scenario to put in play because the U.S. and NATO have been promoting this idea that Russia's on the march west when the reality was that Putin's response to Crimea and to Ukraine was primarily reactive to what the West was doing to try to destabilize him. And if you go back and read Carl Gershman's op-ed in the Washington Post from a year ago, you will see exactly that explained. The idea that first there'd be Ukraine, and then the effort would be to destabilize Putin and get rid of him. So this was really not a case of Putin being aggressive to the West. It was more a case of him being the target of this effort by the West to pull Ukraine out of the Russian sphere of influence.
I rest my case. Your commentator is a Russian stooge.
Oh, that's unnecessary. I mean, I think that...
he's a Russian stooge. I'm sorry. Well,
that's really unnecessary. There's a real difference looking at what's happening in Ukraine between people. I think that's what we're trying to put forth here today, is the differences of opinion that we have in the world and where the reality lives. I mean, if Ukraine... let's say between Yushchenko and Yanukovych, the two most recent presidents of Ukraine before the eruption, were both elected, represent very different parts of Ukrainian society. And now you do have a situation where the West is supporting one side in Ukraine and the Russians are supporting another side. And there's this military battle going on with people being civilians and innocents being killed and Ukrainian soldiers being paraded through the streets and people being beaten on one side and displaced because of the other side. I mean, that's where we are, John, quickly at the moment. So the question is, what should be a response at all from us in this country and what could potentially be unfolding here?
Yeah, I think we should be focusing on the domestic situation in Ukraine and less focusing on it as a tug of war between the East and the West. I mean, when I was in Crimea, this is 20 years ago, the sentiment was rather clear that there was not any interest in continuing to be part of Ukraine. And that seems to me to negate what Dr. Kuzio is saying, that this a series of events in Crimea was initiated by Russia. It certainly was not. I think, as Robert Perry has explained, you had a political situation in Kiev that led to the authorities in Crimea making a request to Russia, and Russia then reacted to that. So Russia has been reacting in regard to Crimea. And when you do have a population like that, we do have the concept of self-determination. And Dr. Kuzio is right that to some extent the international community has tried to insist on territorial integrity, but not to the exclusion of situations where you have a population like that of Crimea that has, for historical and ethnic reasons, wanted to separate. And rather recently, when that issue came up in Serbia, and a case was put to the International Court of Justice as to whether it was unlawful for the people in Kosovo to declare their independence from Serbia. The court said that that was not in violation of any kind of international principle.
So we have about 5 minutes left in this segment, and I'm going to go back to Taras and Robert Perry very quickly here. I mean, just in terms of where does the world go from here? What do we? I mean, it seems like NATO is reluctant to really want to do anything other than talk, because for numerous reasons. So let me start with Taras and finish with Robert Perry very
right.
quickly.
Well, I mean, you know, again, just quickly, Kosovo is 90% Albanian. The Crimea is 58% Russian. There's a slight difference. But most importantly, your commentator never mentions the fact that it's Russian fascists and Nazis. Talk to Jewish organizations in Ukraine who have taken over many of these battalions, separatist battalions, and the Crimean leadership. They belong to a party called the Russian National Unity Party, which is a fascist Nazi party. So if you want to be objective, why don't you criticize fascists on both sides? On the question of NATO, they have a choice this week. I think the Americans, Canadians, and British, who feel maybe slightly guilty about the Budapest Memorandum, may support some support of intelligence, training, light defensive weaponry. They may not. It's difficult for me to know what they will decide on that question. But certainly sanctions will be a lot tougher. The West has tried to tried not to accept the fact that Russia has been heavily involved, despite lots of evidence, including captured Russian soldiers. And now the West is even Germany, which had a very good relationship with between Chancellor Merkel and Vladimir Putin, even they have come on board. The Italians and French, who are also quite amenable to Russia, they've come on board. So the viewpoints of particularly your commentary, they're actually in a minority today. The general majority viewpoint, even amongst the doubters in the EU, has been to move to a more critical stance towards Russia. That will mean definitely tougher sanctions and possibly some kind of military support, I think.
Robert Perry.
Well, I think as Ambassador McFaul had said in commenting about this a week or so ago, that the odd thing about the Ukraine crisis is that it could actually be very easily resolved. All it requires really is for President Poroshenko to sit down or have his representatives sit down with the representatives of the eastern Ukraine separatists or federalists, whatever you want to call them, and work out an arrangement that keeps Ukraine, that keeps eastern Ukraine as part of the country, but giving it more freedom to act. So Kiev is not appointing governors to just govern them in a dictatorial fashion, as we've seen. The Kiev government appointed some of these oligarchs to basically take over parts of these countries and run them as governors. So there should be more. I think I'm not sure how anyone can argue against the idea of more self-rule on the part of people both in eastern Ukraine and western Ukraine, because this is a country that has been deeply divided historically between the western Ukrainians, who are more European-oriented, and where there really was a strong Nazi movement that dates back to World War II, which cannot be denied. It's very real. In fact, the New York Times and London Telegraph recently reported that the Kiev government has unleashed some of these Nazi militias to attack towns in eastern Ukraine. The Azov Battalion operates under the banner of the so-called Volksangel, which was one of the Nazi SS symbols. And they've been doing the street fighting in eastern Ukraine, and they've been sent there specifically for that purpose by the Kiev government. These are rather extraordinary steps, but I think if cooler heads can prevail, then I think the situation in Ukraine could be relatively quickly resolved with some sense of federalism and letting people have some self-rule and recognizing that there are these differences within this country.
We're going to come back to this, obviously, because there's so much that's going to unfold in the coming weeks and months. And I think all three of our guests, there's clearly I hope that our audience has gotten a sense of the divide of thought about where we are going, what's happening in Ukraine, what the options are for our thinking, what the options are for the world. I want to thank Robert Perry, investigative journalist, whose recent book is Neck Deep, The Disastrous Presidency of George W. Bush. Dr. Taras Kuzio joining us from the University of Alberta, where he's at the Center for Political and Regional Studies at the Canadian Institute for Ukrainian Studies. And Dr. John Quigley, who is Professor Emeritus of International Law at Ohio State and was in Ukraine and Crimea in 1994, helping to mediate the status of Crimea. Thank the three of you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. We're going to take a brief break and going out with Beyonce. And once again, she was born on this day in 1981. And don't go away. We'll be right back.